or delusion that will determine what the future will bring. I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, and this evening, for the first hour, they're going to be your views as well, because this is Open Line Wednesday, and we invite your calls at 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. That's 464-8295 here in the Central Coast of California. And, of course, we can talk about whatever you'd like to talk about. You want to talk about the elections? You want to talk about what's happening on the world financial markets and to the economy? Do you want to talk about the strange circumstances that surround the cutting of underwater cables going to the Middle East, so that now certainly the Arabian countries have been cut off from internet use on cables? Certainly Iran has been cut off. Why would they have done that? Who did it? Well, our government says has no idea. It must have been ships dropping anchors, but there weren't any ships in the area at the time that the cables were cut. And when we heard initially that that two cables had been cut and then a third one, I said, well, you know, it's very, very obvious that somebody's cutting those cables. We will be able to tell what the response is and what it's really all about by how soon they get the cables reconnected, because they could have them reconnected in, you know, just a few hours that they had the ships there and the divers and got the cables up and simply splice the ends of the cable together. But we're told, oh no, we can't do that. This is very complicated. Well, we can't explain why it's complicated. We're just not going to be able to repair those cables. And ladies and gentlemen, under those circumstances, you know very well that either the United States or Israel and the United States were involved in cutting the cables. And the question, though, is why? Well, our intelligence agencies are doing it. Is this simply a prelude to a war in the Middle East, which some people have suggested that if there was going to be a war, you wouldn't want to have the enemy being able to get information out? But that may not be the case at all. It's been suggested that this is a warning to these countries over there. And this has to do with the world financial situation. Now, we don't know what the reason was for cutting the cables. Was it a threat to the Arab countries? You better knuckle and better toe the line or you're going to be in real trouble. And, of course, it's been suggested by Bob Chapman that this was basically a warning to the Arab countries down along the Persian Gulf and to Saudi Arabia that you better not even vaguely consider, cutting the tie of your currency to the American dollar. Because if you did, of course, this is just a small example of what we can do to disrupt the infrastructure of your country. You now no longer have internet access anywhere because the internet access was going out over those cables and you're not going to have it anymore. And we can disrupt you financially. We can disrupt you electronically if you do not maintain your relationship, your currency being pegged to the American currency. Well, the trouble is that a lot of these countries over there are getting rampant inflation because of the policies of the Federal Reserve System, because we're cutting our interest rates, we're flooding America and the world with money, which is highly inflationary. And some of those Arab countries are having 6, 8, 10% inflation, and it's driving up the wages. And inflation creates a discontent in a country. And we can pretty well conceal the effects of the inflation here from the American people, but people overseas begin to feel the pain. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question or comment, we'd love to hear from you. And, of course, we are reading today on the Internet that some of the Arab countries are going along with and not, of course, considering pegging their currency to the euro or something else. They're keeping it pegged to the United States, and they have cut their interest rates as we cut our interest rates, but that's highly inflationary. the most significant thing is that Saudi Arabia refused to cut their interest rate because, of course, they're certainly the most powerful of the nations there, with the largest population and the very, very large oil reserves. But, of course, they do not want to have the ravages of inflation created by the United States. And so this could very well be the beginning of certainly the demise of the dollar as the reserve currency of the world. And even more than that, apparently within the next couple of weeks, the Iranians are going to open their oil market. They call it a browse or bourse. And with that, of course, will come the increasing pressure on the American dollar as the reserve currency of the world. Well, we've got Donna calling from Michigan. Hi, Donna. How are you doing?
I'm fine, thank you.
Oh, what part of Michigan are you calling from?
Southeast.
Okay. Is it close to Flint?
Not too far.
All right, fine. So you're listening to us there on the Flint station.
Yes.
Okay, what can we do for you? Do you have a question or comment?
Well, I have a question about Halliburton.
All right, fine.
There's a lot I don't know.
All right.
About Halliburton, but even I know from the controlled media that they've done some things that are highly questionable.
Right.
And my question is, what do they know that we don't know, that they've even taken their location from the United States over to, what was it, Dubai?
They moved to Dubai. Well, of course.
And how can they get away without this continually over and over and over and over?
Well, because, of course, Dick Cheney, the Vice President of the United States, was their president, their CEO, for many years. And after he left office and became the Vice President, they continued paying him. Now, how can you do that? Well, they said we're just paying him deferred salary. Well, I tell you what, when you're paying the Vice President of the United States large sums of money, we don't know how much they paid him or whether they're still paying him, but we know they paid him for a while. I think they've got an inside track. They're getting all sorts of no-bid contracts. They're doing terrible work. I think they're impeding the war effort over in the Middle East, but they get off scot-free, and we'll be back in just a moment as we bring other stations on board. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and this is Open Line Wednesday. Our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have anything you want to talk about, we have on the line Donna call from Michigan asking about Halliburton. And she pointed out that Halliburton has moved its headquarters from the United States to Dubai, and or over there along the Persian Gulf, and I really think it's because, of course, they'll get much better tax treatment over there, and because they know that we're going to have real problems here in the United States, and they don't want to be headquartered here. And, of course, also there are some serious questions about their illegitimate contracts. In other words, they're not competitive bidding. They get massive contracts over in Iraq to feed the troops and supply all sorts of things and supervise construction, things of that sort. And they've done a terrible job, but they're not being held responsible. And it's simply because they have friends in very high places, specifically the former CEO of Halliburton, a man who is known as Vice President Dick Cheney. And what's really so interesting, Don, is that Dick Cheney had been in in government all of his life. He had never had, to my knowledge, a job in the real world. And then when the first Bush administration went out of office Bill Clinton became president, Dick Cheney went to work for Halliburton, but he didn't go to work, some menial job. He went to work at Halliburton as the CEO, the head of the company. Now, how do you go from never having a job in the private sector to being head of one of the largest corporations in the world? You must have friends in high places as well. Anyway, Halliburton's a crooked company, and Dick Cheney, as you know, is a member of the Trilateral Commission, the Council on Foreign Relations, and certainly one of the most powerful men in America because he controls the President of the United States. In fact, President Bush absolutely refused to testify before the 9/11 Commission unless Dick Cheney was at his side. And Dick Cheney's always there. He makes the decisions, and George Bush carries them out. Anything else, Donna?
Are they telling us in a subtle way that things are getting worse in the United States than we are led to believe?
I think so. I think that they know what's going on, but the average American isn't going to believe that. Everybody believes things are going to get better, and the tragedy is they're not going to get better. We're going into terrible financial times, and I think we're moving into a period of chaos and crisis, and I personally believe, from a spiritual point of view, that God is going to bring his wrath on this country because we've turned against him and we've embraced everything that he says is wrong. Okay, anything else?
Well, thank you very much for what you're doing and for your answer.
Oh, God bless you. And please encourage all those other people there in Michigan to begin listening as well. Oh, we need to build up a listening audience all across America. We're building it up. We're grateful for the outlets we have, and specifically for that big station there in Flint. Thanks so much.
I'll do it.
Bye-bye. God bless. And our telephone number again is 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295, and we'll certainly look forward to your call if you have a question or comment. But right now, let's go to Ray, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Hi, Ray. How are you doing tonight?
Oh, pretty good. I want to talk about John McCain.
All right, fine.
I want to know who he is and what he is.
All right, well,
what he stands for. And
yeah, he's the Manchurian candidate. And when he was asked back in, I think it was probably in the year 2000, why he was running for president, he said, well, because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. And we have the article. I pulled it out of Newsweek magazine. He made a similar statement recently, but changed it just a little bit, but it was the same basic idea. John McCain comes from a family that has been in the Navy for a long period of time. His grandfather and his father were both admirals in the Navy, and John McCain went into the Navy as a fighter pilot, continuing the family's traditions. But he lost four airplanes before he had a plane shot down there in Vietnam. And ordinarily, if you lose a couple of airplanes, you're out of the Navy, but he had friends in high places. He had a friend who was an admiral in the Navy, his father. And so, anyway, when John McCain was flying to over North Vietnam, his plane was shot down. And he, of course, was very badly injured. Apparently he had one or two broken legs. And in an effort to get the North Vietnamese to take him to the hospital, he told them who he was, which you're not supposed to do by any military standards. You're not supposed to give anything more than your name, rank, and serial number, but he told them that his father was an admiral, and he agreed to give them all the information that other men who were horribly tortured refused to give up, men who were really heroes over there. And as a result, certainly John McCain got very, very favorite treatment for the North Vietnamese. In fact, if you go onto the website, put up by the Vietnam veterans, you'll see pictures of John McCain being hugged by the man who tortured the American prisoners over there, who actually came here to the United States to testify after the Vietnam War ended. And of course, the thing is that the torturing of our prisoners was supervised by the communists, by the Russians, but that has been totally suppressed. There were at least probably 500 to 1,000 American prisoners still left behind, and probably at least 1,000 left behind in Laos, but 500 to 1,000 left behind in Vietnam. And, of course, after John McCain came home, divorced his wife, and married the very pretty lady he's married to today, he actually supervised the Senate hearings in the early 1990s along with John Kerry. And the two of them covered up all of the fact, did everything they could to prevent the American people from knowing about the boys we left behind. Why did he do that? Well, it's assumed that the North Vietnamese have prisoners of him carrying on with the prostitutes they provided for him. They treated him very well, and of course he is totally subservient to the North Vietnamese and to the Russian communists who So they were in charge of questioning him. But he didn't object. He gave them all the information they wanted, and as a result, he was very well treated. And this is why many of the Vietnam prisoners of war hate John McCain. He has a violent temper, apparently. There's an article on To the Point by Jack Wheeler.
He looks like it.
And of course, you know, many of the senators who know him hate him because he'll yell and scream and curse, and yet here's a man who professes to be a Christian and a conservative. He's not. In fact, he is so liberal that John Kerry had tried to get him to run as the vice president in 2004. In other words, John McCain, the Republican, would run as John Kerry's vice president. And, of course, McCain didn't do that. But certainly there's very little difference between his policies and the policies of Hillary Clinton, other than, of course, John McCain has said he wants to keep our troops over there for 100 years in Iraq if we have to. And how the American people, how people could vote for a man who favors this war and is willing to keep our troops there for 100 years, I will never know. A man who, of course, is not pro-life, a man who is certainly liberal, a man who is in favor of giving the immigrants, people here illegally, amnesty. He's on the wrong side of every issue. He was the author of the McCain-Feingold bill, which actually prevents Christian organizations from telling the people anywhere in America what the voting record is of a political candidate within 30 days of the of an election. In other words, basically to suppress information on people's voting records, on politicians' voting records. John McCain is certainly not a Republican at all, although he's run as a Republican in Arizona. And if he is the candidate, certainly James Dobson, a focus on the family, says he will not vote for him. And there may well be a third party. There may well be an alternative, a third-party candidate, just because many Republicans cannot put up with John McCain because he's not a Republican. He's a Democrat who runs as a Republican.
Yes. And the other thing, too, now they've got him as being the front runner.
He's a member of the Council on Foreign Relations. When the Council on Foreign Relations couldn't get the American people to buy Giuliani, why, of course, they began to run McCain. Is the one person they didn't want was Romney, and not that I'd like Romney at all, but at least I think he has a certain amount of morality, even though he's compromised his principles to win favor with the establishment. But they did not want Romney, so they took McCain, whose candidacy was literally over, and all the media in America began saying he's created McCain. He had no money. He was totally broke, and they provided the money for him because they didn't want Romney.
I see how it works.
Yeah, that's how the game is played.
And I see how it works. And also the fact that the media is, they've manufactured these people. They're manufactured. They're not real people.
You're absolutely right.
They're manufactured.
Right.
And I think John McCain is a dangerous, I think it would be horrible if he became president. But, you know, I mean, Hillary, same thing, you know.
It's like a choice between being shot or being hung.
Yeah.
Do you want John McCain or Hillary Clinton?
Mm.
I don't want either one.
Yeah, no, I don't. And, you know, they've downplayed Ron Paul so much, it's horrible. I noticed that I was watching the election returns, you know, the primary last night.
Right.
And not one mention of John or Ron Paul.
No, I'll tell you what, at least in this county, he got over 6% of the electorate. And Sydney, that was pretty good. The only place he did better was Shasta and Alpine counties. But, you know, Sydney, you go over in Santa Clara, you only got 4%, most places 3%. Here in Santa Cruz, in liberal Santa Cruz, why Ron Paul got over 6%. So that, maybe we're having a little effect. Anyway, we're doing what we're doing because that's what we're called to do. Anything else you want to say, Ray?
Oh, that's about it. I think you covered just about everything I wanted to know about John McCain, but I think the fact is that the media creates these people.
You're absolutely right.
They create them.
Our reality is created, and we simply go along with it. God bless.
Yeah,
thanks so much, Ray.
Thank you. Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and right now we've got Larry calling from Northern Illinois. Once again, our telephone number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. And Larry, how are you doing?
Oh, Dr. Sam, love the show.
Is it cold up there in northern Illinois?
We've had 2 feet of snow in the last month.
Okay.
Let's hear it for global warming.
All right, fine. look, are you listening on shortwave or internet?
No, I'm on the internet, actually, streaming
on
the internet.
Good. Is it coming through well?
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
excellent.
Great. We're just so fortunate to have that internet coverage.
Yeah, I would never know half the information that I am privileged to learn about that without that, so I'm really proud to have that in my home. I had two healthcare-related topics I wanted to address, if I may.
All right, fine.
About a month ago, you had Dr. Toth on there. He's talking about...
Jim Toth, right.
Oh, okay, and he was talking about the price of health care. And I was like, wow, you know, that's some really great points on there. And I was paying $435 a month for my health care through my main employee. I said, this is too much. I can't afford $4,300, whatever it is, per year. It's a lot of money, $5,000. And I said, I had to look around. So what I did is I did the research, and I found a part-time union job working security, and I got that down to $143 a month for the union benefits there. So just FYI for anybody out there, do your research, and you can find something lower cost in your market. And also, I did have one question about, I didn't get to catch the name of it, but it was adult stem cells.
Right. Well, that was a fellow named Glenn Parnum, who was actually... So they got on the program under false pretenses. He was going to talk about adult stem cells, which I think is a fascinating subject, and he was very articulate. And everything he said about adult stem cells were fine, but it ended up he was selling a product made from green algae that he claimed would increase the adult stem cells, but I've looked at his material. I don't find any evidence that it's true. But stem cells are the most exciting thing that's come into medicine in the last decade.
Yeah, I'm really excited doing the research about that for adult stem cells.
We've got a couple of excellent interviews with Dr. John Wilkie, and you can you can order those. I don't believe we have anything archived now. They would have been archived initially, but
okay.
But Sydney, what is happening is basically by creating these adult stem cells from you, and basically they would take your fat, they would get the stem cells out of it, they would culture them, and then they would inject it into your heart, an area where the muscle was dead, and it would form new heart muscle. They would inject it into your pancreas if you're diabetic, and you'd form new islets of Langerhans there. And suddenly the things that are happening with the adult stem cells, I think the most exciting thing, are the quadriplegics of these, or paraplegic people who have transection of their spinal cord, who in the past we had absolutely nothing to offer other than encouragement and, certain rehabilitation. And some of these people have actually been able to begin growing their nerve cells across those defects in their spinal cord and are able to get up and walk where they were confined to a wheelchair before. So these things are the most exciting things in the world. Now, they're still all in the developmental stage, but the potential with the use of adult stem cells, not embryonic stem cells, but adult stem cells, is really so exciting.
Yep. Now, did you read the article in the Chicago Tribune? I just read it.
Hold that thought just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our colleague from upstate New York, upstate Illinois, and he was just talking about stem cells. Now, what was that about stem cells?
Oh, they had an exciting article in the New England area, I believe it was. They had transplant patients where they chemically killed the immune system of the patient before the transplant.
Right.
Then they took bone marrow from the kidney donating patient and the bone marrow from the patient themselves and gradually rebuilt their immune system with the bone marrow. Have you heard anything about this?
Well, they've done that for years. Certainly wiping out the immune system, and then actually sometimes you'll get bone marrow from somebody else, but with similar genetic traits and restore the immune system.
Oh, wow.
This has been really standard treatment for a number of years with certain types of leukemia or lymphoma, and the only way to treat it was simply to wipe out the person's, totally destroy through radiation, chemotherapy, of the immune system, and then, of course, hopefully, why you have the replacement, and the body can actually rebuild immune cells. These stem cells are put into them, get into the bone marrow, and they're actually able to then restore their own immune system and go on and lead a normal life. It's really exciting when you contemplate it.
If we can, you know, make people have higher quality of life without embryonic stem cells, definitely with the adult stem cells and with ethical science. It's so exciting.
Well, the thing is that no private company will invest in embryonic stem cells because, of course, there's no evidence that they work. There's rejection from them, and of course, that many times they produce tumors, teratomas, and you inject them into the brain, and you end up with teeth and skin and fat there in the brain, and people die from it. But private industry and private entrepreneurs will invest in adult stem cells because all the evidence points that it'll work. And here in California, why they talk the people here into voting for $3 billion in bonds for embryonic stem cell research, and the only people who are going to benefit from it are the scientists who put up the money to run the ads to get the state initiative passed so that they could get money. It was the greatest scam I ever saw.
Wow. Yeah, just, you know, when it comes down to it, again, it's all about money.
It's all about money, and it ought to be about scientists, and we've got scientists who think a lot more about the bottom line than they do about helping humanity.
Exactly right. Do you have any, resource, or not resource material, but any websites you can point me out to for adult stem cells or any series?
I would go up on the Internet and look up John Wilkie, W-I-L-K-I-E, and I forgot the name of his organization, but if you Google in John Wilkie, you'll go to his website. And it's a life issues, I believe it is, and he'll have information there on the stem cells. If not, you can always get the interviews I've done with him. They're not available on the internet, but you can always order them from my ministry.
All right, Dave, thank you.
God bless, and thanks so much for calling him.
Bye-bye.
Right now, we've got Mark calling from Spokane, and again, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. And give us a call if you want to talk on, well, whatever subject you want to talk about. Why, we'll be glad to talk with you. We've got Mark on from Spokane. How's the weather up there in Spokane, Mark?
Well, it's cold, lots of snow.
Really? I didn't think it got much snow there in Spokane.
We've had the worst winter in about 40 years.
Well, remember that the government now has the ability to modify the weather, and if you haven't heard our programs on weather modification or seen Bob Fletcher's DVD or read the book on weather modification or the other book on HAARP, the ultimate weapon, they can actually change the flow of the jet stream. They can create storms and droughts and tornadoes, hurricanes. They can do whatever they want to, but we don't know what they're doing because it's all top secret, and the government says we can't let Osama bin Laden know what we're doing with the weather here. Anything else?
They're sure they must be trying to make Al Gore look like an idiot, because they sure are.
Well, you know what? Sometimes it doesn't matter how ridiculous something is. I mean, it could be freezing cold and people believe there's global warming because Al Gore and the entire media tells us that global warming is a reality.
Well, if they can sell that to the American people, then too bad for us, I guess.
Listen, if they can sell John McCain to the American people, they can sell global warming, that's for sure. Okay, good. Do you have a question or comment?
You know, Doctor, I've got three questions. I'll try to make them quick, okay?
All right, fine.
First, and they're unrelated. First one is on gold.
All right.
I've been reading a lot about it, and it seems like it has an inverse relationship with inflation. The more inflation, the weaker the dollar, the higher the gold price.
Right.
But what happened in the 1980s with the huge deficits under the Reagan administration with gold? Why did it just come to a screeching halt?
Because
and go down so much?
Because it's totally manipulated. The price of gold is manipulated, and if you go up on the internet, you can read about it, or certainly Bob Fletcher's newsletter points out the fact that. Oh, wait a minute, we'll be back in just a moment here. Never got to walk, never got to dance. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we have Mark calling from Spokane. He wants to know why the price of gold didn't go up back in the 1980s. And it's simply because it's manipulated, and they can manipulate the prices by putting out large numbers of shorts in on the stock market and simply drive the price down, which is what they're doing today. If they were not doing that, I think gold would be up, well up over $2,000 an ounce, where it should be. So they manipulate the price of gold and of silver. Interestingly enough, platinum seems to be running right now. It's been up over
1,800
an ounce right now. That's the price of platinum.
Okay.
How
long can they manipulate that?
What's that?
How long can they manipulate that?
Well, I don't know. It's going to be interesting to see, but they're doing a pretty good job of it.
Okay, next question is, I watched a speech you gave in 1997 on your internet site.
Was that the Brotherhood of Darkness?
The History of Money. Fantastic.
All right, fine, yeah.
At the end of the speech, you're talking about Colonel House, and it looks like they have opened up his diaries, if I'm not mistaken, and I was wondering if anything was revealed from those.
Well, I'll tell you what, to my knowledge, they've never opened up the diaries. Basically, what happened with the diary was that about 1922, Colonel House turned his papers over to Yale University with the idea that they would not be made public for 50 years until most of the people he talked about had passed away. Well, then in about 1972, then the Sterling Library at Yale was going to release the diaries, but the Time Mirror organization, ties into Time Magazine, came down, bought the rights to them, and said, we're going to publish them. But they had no intention of publishing them. But since they had it copyrighted, nobody else could get hold of them. I was able, actually, to go back to Yale in 1980, and because they thought at that time that a book was going to come out that really covered the full content of House's personal diary, and it was a daily diary he wrote over a period from about 1912 to maybe about 1922, somewhere in there, that this would all be made public, but it never was. But anyway, I, back at Sterling Library, they allowed me to copy most of it, at least all the important things, because I read it all the way through. I spent a week to 10 days reading the diary and copying it, and so we have a copy of it, and to this date, to my knowledge, it has never been published. So, but if you read my book, Brotherhood of Darkness, we cover several important things, but... Well, this is Dr. Stan. It's open lines, and certainly if you'd like to give us a call, our number 1-888-24-LIBERTY, but right now it looks all the lines are lit up, and we're talking to Mark from Spokane, who is asking about Colonel House's diary, and it's never been, to my knowledge, released, but we have copies of all the important parts of it. Anything else?
What was anything revealing about that?
Oh, yes. I mean, certainly one of the most revealing stories to me was how he wanted to be sure that nothing happened to the Communist Revolution. And at one point he talks about having had breakfast with Clemenceau, who was the Prime Minister of France, and Clemenceau wanted to actually send a military unit to put down the Bolsheviks in Russia, and this was 1918, because they were talking about, of course, a world Communist Revolution. And then Colonel House was able to talk Clemenceau and convince him that this would be impossible, it couldn't be done. And then he had lunch with Orlando, the Prime Minister of Italy, and Orlando wanted to do something, and Colonel House convinced him that there was no way we could put down Bolshevism. And then he wrote in his own diary, but I knew what I told them wasn't true. With a couple of battalions of men and a battalion of artillery, we could put down the Communists. But I didn't want Clemenceau and Orlando to realize that. And at the time when I read that, I didn't understand. Now, of course, I understand that there was this group of elitists in America who wanted an enemy, who wanted the Communists there, so they could rally the public behind them. In other words, we had to give our freedom up to the government to protect us against the wicked Communists. And then, of course, it became obvious, if you read Professor Sutton's book, Wall Street and the Bolshevik Revolution, that American corporations and American financiers financed Lenin and the communist movement from its inception, the best enemy that money could buy. And just as today we're giving money to Pakistan, that's giving money to the ISI, the intelligence agency associated with the military, that's giving money to the Taliban who are killing our boys in Afghanistan. It's deja vu all over again. What happened in, it happened, same thing happened in Vietnam, where of course we're funding the Russians, we're funding the North Vietnamese, we're funding the South Vietnamese, and the Viet Cong, we're killing our boys in Vietnam. It's the same pattern over and over again. When you understand that, it all makes sense.
Yeah. Thank you. Last question is, what is your opinion of Martin Luther King?
Well, I think that Martin Luther King was used by the establishment. The civil rights movement, there's a great deal of good that we can say came out of the civil rights movement, but the whole idea was to change the structure of our government and expand the power of the federal authorities, and the government was actually backing Martin Luther King, and the communists were backing Martin Luther King because they all work together because they want to increase the power of the government in Washington, D.C. Well, Martin Luther King succeeded, and he was a very articulate spokesman. I love his speeches, but what he did really was contribute to the demise of our federal system, and of course bringing ever more power to Washington, D.C. in name of correcting the injustice that had been perpetrated by the establishment here. On one hand, they were screaming about discrimination. On the other hand, they were discriminating against the blacks. And then, of course, when Martin Luther King began talking about having to get the American forces out of Vietnam, they had him killed. And actually, in recent years, there was a Dr. Pepper, P-E-P-P-E-R, who actually took a case at the behest of the King family and brought suit against a man who admitted he had been part of the government program to kill King. And the judge and the jury decided the government was over 70% complicit in the murder of Martin Luther King, and not a word of that in the controlled media. But you can go up on the internet and type in Dr. Pepper and the murder of Martin Luther King. You'll find what we're telling you is true.
Why do you suppose his wife had his FBI records sealed for 50 years?
I have no idea. Oh, well, I think because there was a lot of there to suggest that perhaps he had illicit affairs with some other women. That's the only thing I could think of. Because they were following him along, and they may very well have actually planted prostitutes or girls who appeared to be having relationships with him, or maybe he was having illicit sexual relationships, as J. Edgar Hoover claimed. I don't know. But that would explain why they would have sealed the records.
Some have said that his work is in large part been plagiarized as well.
I think there may very well be some truth to that. Hey, I got it, Brian. We got full board.
Thank you.
God bless. Thanks for calling. And let's go to Todd, who's calling from Plattsburgh, New York. Hey, where's Plattsburgh?
If you know New York, it's the very northeastern corner, about 20 miles below the border of Canada.
Okay, how are you hearing us up there?
I have internet.
Okay, very good. Well, do you have a question or comment?
I'll try to. Actually, this is convoluted, but I'm going to try to make it as. First, I wanted to say, Dr. Stan, that and I'm just telling you that you're one of the extremely very few voices that are able to mix the spiritual aspect with what's going on in the world. And I think there's so rare to have voices like this. And, the Holy Spirit is obviously at work here, because I know, Dr. Stan, you're true. I wanted to lead into the fact of two things. I personally believe that unless you know, like you're always reiterating on your show, that this is a spiritual, supernatural existence, you will not know how things go on, at least have an understanding that things may seem a certain way, but you have to be able to be perceptive. I think this is the sermon of the Holy Spirit. But I want to ask you this. A lot of people, there's like a 9/11 movement across the lake, Lake Champlain in Burlington, and I keep abreast of them, and they constantly talk about, like Ron Paul and Alex Jones, and they keep equating them with like the COINTELPRO type of aspect. And sometimes it gets me to thinking that, because sometimes I look at Alex Jones and I really wonder, like this man is just, he's almost like from Central Casting. And you know, in the sense that he really has all the access, all the information. It's hard to believe that he's genuine. Sometimes it's really just, and I just wanted to know what your opinion, or what you think, you really think, you know, Alex Jones is a really legitimate source of, I mean, I know that though his information is almost impeccable, but you know, it's almost too good to be true.
Well, no, I think that Alex is an amazing individual. He has the ability to get people's emotions going. People listen to his programs and their adrenaline gets up, and he's entirely different than I am. But he recognizes the spiritual aspect of what's going on. He may not talk about it as much as I do. I think Alex does a great job. I think that Alex, you know, is reaching people I could never reach. I like to think I'm reaching some people he couldn't reach, but I think we complement one another.
Right.
And I think he is just what he appears to be. I've talked to him many times, both on the air and off the air, and to his wife and to his staff, and I think that he's doing a great job.
He seems fearless. It's almost unbelievable to see someone that you can't hear the quiver in their voice, and he is just an out there type of guy that knows the very darkest of things, and yet he's unwavering in his energy.
Well, I sort of look upon Alex and myself as, you know, that old adage, fools rush in where angels fear to tread. And if God weren't there to protect him, I think that they would have destroyed him long ago. And I think they would have destroyed me if we didn't have a hedge of protection from people all across America, in fact, all across the world, praying for us. And
praise God. Let me just say, add this real quick, Dr. Stan, if you will. You know, I just want to say is, you know, when you say to the listeners, when you say this, unless you understand this is a spiritual existence, spiritual battle, people really need to understand that it's just not what you see and what you perceive with your senses, that there is something you can only get by the discernment of the Holy Spirit. And I think that's something that people need to understand, that you can only arm yourself with the truth, and that's the Holy Spirit, and that's God, and that's Jesus Christ. And God bless you, Dr. Stan.
Hey, well, thank you so much. Have you seen our talk on the forbidden secret?
Yes.
Okay, fine. Well, that really, of course, begins to take you beyond the brotherhood of darkness into the spiritual battle. You're absolutely right. God bless you. Thanks so much for calling.
Thank you.
Bye-bye. Let's go to, let's see. This is Richard calling from Cincinnati.
Yeah, hi, this is Richard.
Hi, Richard. Go ahead. Do you have a question or comment?
Yes, sir. I have a couple questions.
Okay.
Okay. One thing is, I was formerly, I guess, really patriotic, an ex-Marine, and I was blessed to go on and go to college after that. But what has availed itself to me is pretty much become common knowledge, is that, you know, there are a lot of secret societies that are pulling the strings. So there was a gray area at one point where, you know, what I stood for as a Marine wasn't necessarily, I wasn't fully aware of what I was standing for. However, recently I've noticed that knowledge of organizations like the Illuminati and other political bodies or pseudo-political bodies has become quite common. You know, many people I talk to, and I'm in the ministry. I minister on the streets as much as I possibly can. And I know that the Bible says, never speak evil of dignitaries. So I know, what do I do in that situation?
Well, where does it say you are never to speak ill of dignitaries? What's the biblical reference for that?
I believe that's in Peter. It doesn't say that you are. It mentions a type of person, and it, in the latter part of the verse, they speak ill of dignitaries and things of that nature.
Well, I think that if we don't speak out against people who are doing evil, then we're not really being as we should. And certainly, you know, John the Baptist spoke out against the king, and of course he lost his head because of it. But he was not afraid to tell the king that what he was doing was wrong. And I believe that Jesus certainly, you know, he went up against the money changers in the temple, and they were dignitaries. They were associated with the scribes and the Pharisees. He called the scribes. Jesus called the scribes and the Pharisees dens of vipers, you know. I think that we have the obligation to tell people the truth, And to explain the fact that there really are dark spiritual forces and that many of our leaders are involved in the occult, in astrology, and in Frank Satanism. And if you have a chance to, you ought to listen to the program I did this afternoon. It'll be posted up on my website, but it should be posted there by tomorrow. It would be your area of the country. It would be 7 o'clock, but here it's the 4 to 5 program on the West Coast. And interview with William H. Kennedy, who goes into the Tony Blair, who is past Prime Minister of Great Britain, who has been deeply involved in Satanism and other occult practices. I think we have an obligation to speak out. I believe God gave us the ability to speak out, and I think we don't honor him unless we point out that we are involved in a spiritual battle, and many of our leaders have embraced the dark side.
Okay, I thank you. I do agree with you there that truth is the most important thing, regardless of whether you lose your head or not.
Amen. God bless. Thanks so much for calling, Richard. And
sir, may I ask one more question?
Okay, please? Sure. Go ahead.
I'm 43 years old. I don't want to give too much information out of the air, but I actually did. But for the last 6 years, I've seemed to have a connection with, I guess, entities that are not of this world. I am not crazy. I've been checked out mentally and things, but they call themselves angels, you know.
Well, just make sure they're not demons posing as angels. And because the way you can tell is you simply pray for discernment, and then when you come in contact with them, if you're a demonic spirit, in the name of our Lord Jesus Christ and by his blood, I command you to leave. If they leave, you know where they're coming from. Believe me,
yes.
As a true believer and as a Christian, you have power. It's not of your own. I don't ever think that you on your own can confront evil, but through the power of Jesus Christ you can. And the demons actually fear the name of Jesus Christ. They really do. Okay?
I thank you very much.
God bless you. And let's go to Gloria, who's been waiting patiently up there in Spokane. Hi, Gloria. How are you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan. Yes, earlier this evening, someone called in from Spokane, and they mentioned global warming. And I just wanted to mention to your listeners, because we have a lot of people in the Coeur d'Alene, Spokane area, and we have a lot of snow here, but we have a wonderful speaker for Lincoln Day, Christopher Horner, author of The Politically Incorrect Guide to Global Warming and Environmentalism, who's going to speak at our annual Lincoln Day dinner on February 16th at the Marabou Park Hotel. So I just wanted to kind of let the people in this area know about this in case they haven't heard about it.
All right. Do you have a telephone number, Gloria, for this?
Do have a phone number, but also we do have, if they just go to SpokaneGOP.com.
SpokaneGOP.com. Go ahead.
They can find all the details about when it is, and there's also a wonderful candidate fair, so people can find out who's running, and our officials are going to be there. So it'll be a really exciting event.
All right. All right, fine. And so certainly that's I hope that the program does very well. He's an excellent...
Well, this speaker, Christopher Horner, his book was on the New York Times bestseller list last year for 6 months, and he has spoken all over the world. So this is an incredible speaker that we just have a great opportunity to have here in Spokane.
Okay.
So hopefully, maybe you could have him on your show one night.
In fact, I really should. Call me off the air and get me his telephone number, and I'll give him a direct call, okay?
Okay,
okay.
Thank
you. Do you have his number right now?
I don't have his number. I guess it was kind of hard for us to even find out, and I don't have it personally, but the people that arranged for him to come did get his number. But the Politically Incorrect Guide, these guides, there's several books on the market that they're all really wonderful.
And in fact, I just was looking at my copy of the Politically Incorrect Guide on Global Warming. It's an excellent book. Thanks.
Well, I'll be happy to call you and get his number, and then you can call him, because I have not read his book. I'm looking forward to buying it and getting a signature from him.
All right, fine. God
okay,
bless.
Thank you.
Good night, Gloria.
Bye.
Good. Bye-bye. Let's go to Mike, who's calling from Santa Cruz. Again, our number, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, 1-888-24-LIBERTY, or 464-8295. Hi, Mike. How you doing?
Yeah, hi, Stan. I want to respond to your caller about, speaking evil of the leaders. We don't exactly have to speak evil of them, but we can certainly stand against them in what they, in the way they lead and things. No, I want to say Moses told Pharaoh, "Let my people go," and God backed him up every inch of the way. So, you know, the whole of Scripture really speaks to the thing. We're not really to hold ourselves subject to Satan's ways just because of some misunderstanding about Scripture. But, I want to talk about John McCain, though. If I could give my take on the whole thing.
Okay.
I hear the music, though.
Go ahead.
Yeah. The whole thing is really a charade. You don't really have to worry about McCain becoming president because it's going to be Hillary.
All right. Well,
it's a, you know, you can call it this theoretical, but he did go into the election in 2000 with that statement that he was doing it because Angela Lansbury turned over the Queen of Diamonds. And, you know, if that was tongue-in-cheek or whatever, we can't be sure what to make of that exactly. But for those who are interested, he could have been making a statement that, yes, he was the Manchurian candidate or a Manchurian candidate.
He may have probably was just being making a jest. But
yeah.
Hold on there for just a minute. Okay, Mike.
In any case, I believe that he's just being used. He's doing what he's been told to do, along with all of the other candidates. I believe that Hillary Clinton was really the anointed one from however many years ago, but they still have to put on an election. It's all theater. They have to make us continue to believe that yes, we do have elections here in the United States, and in a way we do. I mean, we did go to the voting booth yesterday. Here in California, and we get to vote for the candidate of their choice, except I did beat the system personally. I voted for Ron Paul. I know they don't want him, but they're seeing to it for sure that he doesn't stand a chance. He's the only one really capable of governing properly out of the whole pack.
I'm going to let you go there, but I agree with I can't
right.
comment on that.
Yeah, you can't, but I can.
Okay, God bless. Thanks so very much.
Okay.
And right, let's go to Roger, who's calling from Pennsylvania. Hi, Roger. How you been?
Yeah, thanks. Very good. I just want to charge up your listeners. They really haven't even yet tried to exercise their huge power and influence. Now, consider that just a real quick tiny object lesson. Maybe the worst station in the whole USA, in addition to dozens of others, and you're real easy to plug here to Dr. Stan in almost any context, any topic in particular. Dr. Stan is the easiest to plug, but I've gotten these brutally incisive plugs in for Ron Paul. The worst station maybe the whole U.S., WABC New York. In the last 3 months, I've managed to get on there maybe 7 or 8 times. How is that? Because I really haven't even hardly been trying. On the most screened and triple-filtered station out there. Now, this is not about WABC, much less me. This is about building just 2 or 3 listeners, and I know you have hundreds just in that market alone. This is about nationwide. Every station USA, just 2 or 3 listeners follow through, will be able to triple your syndication inside of 2 or 3 months.
All right, well, you just keep plugging this all you can, and... Well, we'll appreciate your getting to the audience there in New York.
And God bless y'all.
And God bless you too, Roger. Thanks very much for calling, and thanks very much for being faithful through the years. Bye-bye. All right, fine. Well, that was Roger in Allentown, Pennsylvania. And Alan, he's, you know, listens to the talk radio, and I know many times he has put in plugs on other people's stations for our program, so I really appreciate that. And if you're out there in the listening audience and you have an opportunity to tell others about our program, please do, because that's how we progressively build up our listening audience all across America, from just a few to many, many thousands. We'll be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, and of course, this is the time when I need to remind our listeners out all across America that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. And if you are in a position to help us, we'd appreciate hearing from you. And if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and get our 4 best tapes or CDs of the month and our monthly newsletter, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. And if you'd like, of course, to get a free copy of our newsletter or a free catalog, either the regular catalog or the health catalog or the emergency food catalog, give us a call. We'll be glad to provide it. Let me put a plug in for our December newsletter, because it is basically a speech that was given by the commanding general who led the coalition forces in Iraq between June of 2003 and June of 2004. His name was Lieutenant General Ricardo Sanchez, and General Sanchez actually is retired from the military now. But he gave a speech on the 12th of October of 2007 last year, and it was commented on in the newspapers, but nobody ever read the speech, and so I felt it was an important speech to get out, and so we tracked down his speech and we put it into the newsletter. What General Sanchez says, the best we can hope for in Iraq is not to be defeated. That's the best we can hope for. And as you read the speech, you realize, of course, we're not trying to win. We're not been allowed to win. The military has not been allowed to win. And as he points out, the people in Washington, D.C., the politicians, are posturing, so they'll look into their constituents, and our men, our young men and women are dying. And he makes that statement over and over again, how the military is doing their best. They're fighting and fighting valiantly. But in essence, we are not allowed to win the war. If you'd like, of course, to get a copy, a free copy of the newsletter, it should be up on the Internet, posted there at RadioLiberty.com. But if you don't have access to the Internet, why, give us a call at 1-800-544-8927. We'll get you a copy of General Sanchez's speech, and then we hope that you will copy that speech and distribute it all across America, because, believe me, the controlled media done everything they could to suppress it. Because the last thing they want is for the American people to know that Iraq and Afghanistan are Vietnam all over again. It's a no-win war. It's like that Bay of Pigs invasion. We didn't go in to try to win. They took away the air cover. They took away the supplies and the resupplies from those boys. They were sent in there to die. Unfortunately, a few of them did escape. They were not all killed, but they lost more than they ever should have lost in a battle that they were not allowed to try to win. It's the concept of the no-win war of Korea, the no-win war of Vietnam, where we're not allowed to bomb the major targets. But certainly there are rules of engagement today in Afghanistan and Iraq that make it extremely difficult for the military. And if you go into a war, you're going to win it. We did not go into either war to win them. And when you understand that, things begin to make a lot more sense. Well, certainly we hope many of you will get my book, Brotherhood of Darkness. You'll get my talk on Iraq, The Untold Story. Because, of course, you want to get the syllabus with that, and you'll learn the story of all of the wars of the last century. And, of course, how they were all contrived. They were all brought about under false pretenses, and the reason for them was to bring about a world government, because this is really what it's about. It's all about a one world government, a new world order, and a new world religion. Certainly you want to get my talk on the forbidden secret. We think it's very important. If you're suffering from the cold now, you need to get our DVD. It's Bob Fletcher's DVD on weather modification. You want to get our 4-tape set on weather modification. You want to get the book we carry on weather modification. You need to get the 4-tape, the new book on HAARP, the ultimate weapon, and then, of course, on the 4-tape set on HAARP. We have all sorts of information there. We want you to get that information. We want you to get it to others and let them know that the government actually can modify the weather. They do it all the time. And why do they do it? Well, of course, they want to create droughts and storms and famines, and they can use it against the enemy, or they can use it against the American people. We'll be back in just a moment at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan back here at Radio Liberty, coming to the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at. Illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and, of course, the views of our guest. And hopefully, yes, we're going to have him with us, William Grigg, who is actually was the senior editor of the New American Magazine, and now, of course, he's doing freelance writing and working for the Welch Foundation, and certainly has his own blog site, writes books, and of course has to look after his five children as well. I don't know how he gets everything done that he does, but he writes a blog spot, and we'll tell you later how to get it. It's usually updated three or four times a week, and there's all sorts of information there that you need to know, and there's so many things that happen and going on today that need to be covered, and William does an excellent job of that, and that's why we really feel privileged to have him here with us several times a week right here at Radio Liberty. William, what are we going to talk about tonight?
Well, Dr. Stan, I really appreciate your kind words, and I think that we have to talk about what happened yesterday with the Super Tuesday primaries, but more importantly, I think we need to tie that in with what's going on with the financial system's ongoing implosion and the fact that this is going almost completely unremarked in the presidential campaign, except for the very insightful and almost totally ignored comments of Dr. Ron Paul, the congressman from Texas. I mean, we're living in a time right now where the very underpinnings of modern finance have been revealed to be thoroughly rotten, and they're collapsing in real time in front of us. And we're living in a time now where the dollar is in free fall. And just by way of illustrating that point, there was a piece I saw on the wires this evening. It said the following, in the latest example that the U.S. dollar just ain't what it used to be, I'm quoting now directly from this Reuters piece, some shops in New York City have begun accepting euros and other foreign currency as payment for merchandise. Robert Chu, who's the owner of a little shop called East Village Wines, told Reuters, we had decided that money is money, we'll take it and just do the exchange whenever we can with our bank. The increasingly weak U.S. dollar, once considered king among currencies, has brought waves of European tourists to New York with money to burn and looking to take advantage of hugely favorable exchange rates. We didn't realize we could take so much in, and there were that many people traveling or having euros to bring in, but some days you'd be surprised at how many euros you get, Chu said. Now we have to get familiar with other currencies and the British pound and the Canadian dollars we take. And then the article points out that while shops in many U.S. towns on the Canadian border have long accepted Canadian currency, and some stores on the Texas-Mexican border take pesos, the acceptance of foreign money in Manhattan wasn't heard of until recently. That's a really good illustration of what we're talking about when we are discussing the decrepitude of the dollar. And that has monumental consequences for the entire system, this system that was set up with the end of the Bretton Woods Accord back in 1971 when Nixon severed the last remaining ties to gold. And the fact that we've been able to export inflation in the form of a fiat currency, which is backed by nothing but the so-called full faith and credit of the United States government, which is to say the force and fraud exerted by the United States government, export our inflation, and it's starting to come back on us now. This is unprecedented in history, where the world's hyperpower, the dominant empire, has been a mendicant hyperpower.
Well, of course, this is what happened to Great Britain. You know, they were the reserve currency of the world,
yeah,
during the First World War, and then they were gradually simply eclipsed by the United States. You know, and certainly, and by the end of the Second World War, the dollar was the most prevalent currency in the world. And then after the Bretton Woods Agreement, why, all currencies were tied to the American dollar, and the dollar was as good as gold.
Mm-hmm.
Well, those days are long since gone. The dollar is no longer as good as gold. It has no backing behind it at all, other than the integrity of our president. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty.
Well, one of the big differences that we're seeing right now with the circumstance that the United States is in is that we have the world's reserve currency here in the dollar, and it has been enjoying that status now for a number of decades. It's a fiat currency, and the world's hyperpower that issues the world's reserve currency is also the world's largest debtor by several orders of magnitude. And that is really something, I think, unique in history. I mean, Bonner and Wiggin, in their book Empire of Debt, which came out a couple of years ago, devoted a great deal of attention to that subject, the fact that you have a superpower that is really proceeding on money that is borrowed from much poorer people in Asia, China particularly, that they're basically lending us the money, propping up our dollar by buying T-bills and other securities, and they're lending us the money to buy goods from them and creating a dynamic that has strip-mined our industrial sector and left us with really nothing to contribute apart from this increasingly worthless paper money that is in a state right now of what pilots would call a flat spin, just a fatal trajectory that's going to result very quickly in the complete demolition of the purchasing value of what we earn and the value of what we've saved. And this is a process, we've talked about this before, but it bears examination again. This is a process being consciously carried out by the Federal Reserve. Every time they bring down the BIPs, every time they bring down the base points, the rate that they charge, lower interest rates, they're doing an immense favor for Wall Street, these people who are basically government and Federal Reserve subsidized speculators. They're doing a tremendous favor for them, and at the same time, they are stealing the value of what we have earned and what we have saved. And those who are on fixed incomes, like my parents, my father is 84 this year, my mother is 76, and they live on a fixed income. Like most people of their vintage, they tend to be very frugal, but they simply can't keep ahead in terms of their frugality. They cannot keep ahead of the diminishing returns they're getting for the money that they get by Social Security and the investments that they have managed to put away, the savings that they managed to accrue. And anybody like myself who has a large household and is earning modest but suitable amount of money can testify that we simply can't keep ahead of the treadmill as it speeds up and as the degree of incline becomes more difficult. But once again, this is a situation which is very much to the advantage of the politically connected people on Wall Street. That's how it's supposed to work. But there are externalities that are starting to be factored in regarding the political standing of the United States.
Hold on, I'm going to have you just hold that
sure.
thought there, and we'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is William Grieg, and he's simply talking about the problems that people are having as far as inflation. If you're on a fixed income and you have your investment, but your investments are bringing in less, and of course the price of goods are going up, and it's getting increasingly difficult for people here in the United States to make ends meet, especially when they're no longer working. But this is happening all throughout the world. We've heard exactly the same thing from people living in Germany. And of course, they've really, of course, sabotaged them by converting the German mark into the euro, and they lost literally half of the value of their life savings when that occurred. And many of the elderly German people are being impoverished. This is happening all throughout the world. But you know, one of the things that really worries me more than anything is that America, being the largest debtor nation in the world, we may have the most powerful military, but we're having to borrow a couple of $1 billion every single day to pay our debts. And because suddenly China has tremendous reserves, and Russia has tremendous reserves, and certainly other people that hate America have tremendous reserves. And has anybody considered the fact that they could use economics as a weapon to bring down America? I will tell you, Osama bin Laden has, and I've read the things he's mm-hmm. talked about, how vulnerable we are to an economic or financial attack. And there's an article I picked up just today where one of our leaders of our country was warning Congress how susceptible we are to an economic attack.
Yeah. Well, as a matter of fact, that was exactly what I was going to bring up. The fact that if you have something that is big enough and obvious enough that even small children can understand it, eventually the CIA will come to understand that fact. It has to be really big, it has to be very obvious, but if you give them time and draw them pretty pictures,
and sit back and wait patiently. Eventually, the geniuses who run our intelligence agencies will come to understand something of that nature. And that's what we're discussing right now with respect to the financial situation and our geopolitical posture as a country. Michael McConnell is the National Director of Intelligence. That's a relatively new post. It was created about 2 years ago to supervise this sprawling and metastasizing collection of intelligence agencies that are being created. And he was giving testimony before Congress just a couple of days ago, and he finally brought up something that has been obvious to a number of us. I know that you've been talking about this literally for years, if not longer, and I've been talking about this for quite a while as well, and that is the fact that the collapse of the dollar has obvious geostrategic implications with respect to our relationship to Russia, China, and other nations. And the headline of the story says, U.S. sees Russia-China-OPEC financial threat. The United States is worried that Russia, China, and the OPEC oil-producing countries could use their growing financial clout to advance political goals, the top U.S. spy chief told Congress this past Tuesday. Such economic matters join terrorism, nuclear proliferation, and computer network vulnerabilities as top U.S. security threats. McConnell said U.S. intelligence agencies had, quote, concerns about the financial capabilities of Russia, China, and OPEC countries and the potential use of their market access to exert financial leverage to political ends. To which Aristotle might say, well, duh, of course they can, and of course they're going to. I mean, obviously, and this is a principle that is rooted in the Bible, so we know that it's true, the borrower is a slave to the lender. And when we are borrowing money from China, we're putting ourselves in a position of not only dependency, but we're putting ourselves in a position of subservience to them. The same is true with respect to Saudi Arabia. The same is true to a certain extent with respect to Japan and the United Arab Emirates and all these other companies, all these other countries with sovereign wealth funds that are pouring money into the United States right now and buying up tangible assets because the dollars that they have accumulated in their foreign exchange holdings are depreciating, so they want something tangible. And what are the things that they are going to acquire? Will obviously be political leverage. That just follows logically from the proposition that they have economic clout. And this is the situation of engineered interdependence. That's a really important thing that most people miss. This is not something that is simply happening. The people who have brought about this state of affairs are not stupid people. Perhaps the people running our intelligence agencies are, but the people who cut their paychecks are many, many horrible, repulsive things, but they are not stupid. Stupid is not on that list of traits that you find in members of the power elite. They understand what's going on, and they understand that we have found ourselves now wedded unnaturally to regimes that are antithetical to our way of life and our understanding of the fundamental dignity of the individual as a being created in the image of God with rights the government is supposed to protect. But this is a state of affairs that has been brought about over the course of decades through careful and sometimes reckless, but generally careful planning and management of our financial affairs and of the currency that is created by the Federal Reserve and the policy that is handed down from Washington. And the thing that I find remarkable about this, Dr. Stan, is that there seems to be an informal, or for all I know, it is a formal embargo on discussion of this subject in the presidential campaign, with the exception, of course, of the skunk at the garden party, Dr. Paul. He's about as welcome as John the Baptist was in the courts of Herod for pretty much the same reason. He's telling truth without fear or favor, and he's doing so in ways that rankle the sensibilities of those who are at the top of the political pyramid. I mean, he's talking about the fact that whether we want to or not, eventually we are going to have to withdraw our forces from abroad. We are going to have to stop this heedless interventionist foreign policy that involves the invasion and occupation of countries hither and yon, because we're simply not going to be in control of our own financial destiny. There's not necessarily a date certain when this development will come about, but it is something as predictable as the law of gravity. We simply are no longer going to be able to be projecting power on behalf of Washington. We're going to be in hoc, and we're already in hoc. We're going to be more or less controlled by the foreign entities that have been keeping our economy afloat, propping the dollar up. And chances are, within a very short period of time, we're going to be tangibly, obviously, and undeniably bankrupt. And in such a circumstance, we're not going to be this globe-striding colossus. We're not going to be a hyperpower. We're going to be henpecked and besieged bad debtors with a huge number of bad debts people are going to be collecting on in various ways, and we're going to be doing the bidding of the people who've been lending us money. It's the same type of a thing that happens when somebody finds himself compromised by borrowing gambling money from a criminal syndicate. I mean, if you have something that the criminal syndicate wants, rather than simply breaking your bones or maybe shooting you, then they can use the leverage that you have given them to extort from you cooperation to do something that would be against your interests and probably enrich them illegally. And we're going to find ourselves in that same situation. That's what Dr. Paul is talking about, but everybody laughs him to scorn, and nobody wants to talk about this. We have these people weaving these delirious fantasies about nationalized health care. Barack Obama is talking about moving Head Start backwards practically into the cradle and making all American children, almost from the time of their birth, the overt wards of the state to be raised by government, as if we could afford to do it. And it's a bad idea whether or not we can afford to do it. It's a bad and evil and totalitarian idea. We've got people talking about doubling or tripling Guantanamo. That's a favorite trope of Mitt Romney. People talking about the idea of vastly expanding the military and modernizing it and giving it a whole new trough of high-tech weaponry that would cost heaven only knows how much. Talking about building border fences, talking about building this huge hyper-modern surveillance state. Well, they're doing a really good job of building a garrison state, but the fact is that in a very short period of time, we're not only going to run out of money, we're going to run out of the illusion of prosperity that all these grand projects depend on.
And I think really what's so important is for our listeners to understand that there is a plan, it is an intent, and that is, of course, to lower the living standards of the American people. And that's laid out in the Earth Charter, where they call for the equitable distribution of wealth, not only within nations, but between nations. Now, equitable distribution of wealth between nations means that we're going to have to transfer the wealth of the American people, not the wealth of the elite, but the wealth of the American people to other nations, and raise our living standards to that of either the Chinese peasant or the Mexican peasant. And, and people say, well, that could not happen. And I would ask, why couldn't that happen? It's in the process of happening today as we transfer our manufacturing capacity overseas, as we open up our borders for people coming in from India with degrees in architecture and engineering who will work for half what the Americans will do, as the CAT scans and MRIs and other sophisticated medical imagery is sent digitally over to India, where it can be read for a fraction of what it can be read for here. And of course, then we put American radiologists and American trained physicians out of work. They know exactly what they're doing. They just want the American people to understand that there is a plan to impoverish our people, and it is an elite plan by people who have a different allegiance. Their allegiance is not to America, but to this global concept, and America will become a third world nation unless something dramatic happens.
Well, the other day, Bill Clinton made a comment that's very much in harmony with what you were talking about. He was asked about this chimerical threat of global warming, and that's something, of course, is now becoming one of the overarching themes of the supposed need for this globalist system of redistribution of wealth. And one of the things Bill Clinton said is that we're just going to have to slow down the economy, and we're going to have to bring down the American standard of living in order to have a more sustainable carbon footprint as a country. I was astonished that he'd say something that candid, because that's very much part of the game plan that's been in existence now for many decades and has been in circulation at the United Nations and in some of their affiliated organs, the idea that in order to reduce man's burden on the environment, it's necessary that we reduce the standard of living of the most productive country in history, which is the United States. Now you hear that coming out of the mouth of Bill Clinton as he's campaigning for his wife.
But of course, they're not talking about bringing down the living standards for the elite.
Oh, of course
not. Bill Clinton and Hillary and Al Gore. I mean, you're going to move from a three-tiered society, upper class, a middle class, and lower class, to a two-tiered society. Upper class, then of course the police and the military that will keep the public in line, and then of course the lower class. And so many people who attain middle class status will lose that. This is planned. They know exactly what they're doing. This is what global warming is all about. If we sign the Kyoto Protocol, we will deindustrialize America, impoverish our people, and destroy what little residual wealth there is in this nation. We'll be right back.
it's interesting you bring up this whole idea that socialism is basically sort of, I believe it was Gary Allen who said it's the royal road for the super rich. People talk about the idea that socialism is somehow going to be a more humane and more egalitarian way of living, that people will be equalized, that the high will be brought low and the low will be exalted, these biblical imagery. Well, there will be a time when the prideful, the high will be brought down low, they'll be abased, and the humble will be exalted. That's God's affair, and God alone has the jurisdiction to do so. It's interesting that when God walked among us in the person of Jesus Christ, he was asked on one occasion to settle a dispute involving an inheritance. He said, well, who made me a divider among men? You know, I'm not in the business of redistributing wealth. That's not what this is all about. And a lot of people make that mistake or seduced into believing that somehow the gospel injunctions to care for the less fortunate mandate coercive redistribution of wealth. They do no such thing. There's nothing in the Bible that would justify that. There's a great deal in the Bible that explicitly repudiates this. I mean, to begin with, the commandment against theft, the commandment against covetousness. But the covetous impulses in human nature are conscripted by socialism as a way of enriching the wealthy and the powerful and the politically connected and the unscrupulous at the expense of the rest of us. There was a report put out by Manufacturing Technology News last month, January 24th, just a few weeks ago, that gave us a really sobering breakdown of just how bad things have gotten behind this illusion, this facade of prosperity that has been created by the now collapsing debt bubble, the housing mortgage refinancing, consumer refinancing bubble. Median household incomes during the last 7 years have fallen by 2%, and the savings rate went negative for the first time since before the Great Depression. The growth in the job sector, the private sector, job creation has been perfectly stagnant. It's interesting, we've been told that when we moved away from being an industrial nation, we were going into a post-industrial economy where service and management jobs would become the ascendant form of livelihood for people seeking a path into the middle class and then into prosperity. Manufacturing, of course, had been the gateway for many people after World War II and during the 1950s and 1960s. People with high school educations could get manufacturing jobs, support a family, put away savings, buy a home, provide all the amenities that we now associate with middle-class living, and also transmit something to their children so they can improve their circumstances. We're supposedly moving into a post-industrial economy characterized by management and service jobs. Well, just in the last year, last quarter, as a matter of fact, we see that now the service sector of the economy is beginning to contract very, very quickly, which is a very predictable outcome of the collapse of the bubbles of indebtedness I described earlier. More than one quarter of the new jobs created since 2001, I find this significant, are in the government sector. Not only do we find a lot of them in healthcare-related fields, our healthcare system is thoroughly intertwined with the government. We do not have free market medicine. We have not even a semblance of free market medicine. It's thoroughly statist. But the other big growth stock in public sector, government sector hiring, has been prison guards, as well as homeland security-related fields, law enforcement professions of various sorts. So that sort of, I think, supports what you're talking about, Dr. Stan, regarding the fact that those mechanisms that would tend to be designed to maintain social stability.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here. Well, this is Dr. Stan, I guess, is William Grigg, and we're talking certainly about what's happening to our society and really, of course, the program of progressively impoverishing the middle class and eventually wiping them out. And then, of course, the jobs that will be available will be those within the military and police force and prison guards. And then, of course, everybody, the vast majority of the people, will be in the lower class. But you're going to have a military class to keep the poor people in line like they have in Mexico. And this is exactly the form of government that our leaders are leading us to. With a very small group of very, very wealthy and powerful people, and then, of course, a great mass of impoverished people. In Mexico, we brought that form of government in the 20s and 30s. It was American interference that brought about the Mexican Revolution, and tragically the same thing is going to be, and the same fault is, fate is going to befall the American people. Go right ahead.
Yeah. I've lived in Mexico, I've lived in Guatemala, I've visited the Middle East and Africa, and what we're seeing here in the United States is very much akin to the systems I lived under when I was in Mexico and Guatemala. You've got a really crude, kleptocratic oligarchy. Now, let me define those terms. Oligarchy refers to the rule of a tiny group. Oleg from Greek means small. So you're talking about a small, entrenched, powerful minority that is self-replicating and devoted to its own self-preservation. It could take the form of a socialist oligarchy, like you had with the Politburo and the highest echelons thereof in Soviet Russia. And that same system is still in existence in post-Soviet Russia to a certain extent. The people who had been the nomenklatura, ruling elite in Russia, are now the new business class, the people who are the mobbed up rulers of Russia, the people who drive the expensive cars and usually have a retinue of very attractive Russian women at their beck and call, and who have bodyguards who are former members of the security organs. They're the people who are the ruling elite in Soviet Russia. In China, you've got the same type of a thing where you've got a obviously Marxist-Leninist, Maoist, Deng Xiaoping-inspired communist oligarchy running that country of over a billion people. In Mexico and in Guatemala, you have sort of a corporatist post-revolutionary oligarchy. Here in the United States, you've got a corporatist oligarchy as well. You've got a small, very well-entrenched, very wealthy and powerful elite of whom the Bush family would be perfectly representative. And why do I call it a kleptocratic oligarchy? Well, a kleptocracy is a government that is run by thieves. You know, somebody who is a kleptomaniac is somebody who steals shamelessly. And so you have basically a robber state, a state that is in the business of stealing through the instrumentality of government force and government encouraged and abetted and government-backed fraud. St. Augustine, in his work, The City of God, had a wonderful, very brief aphorism that I quote constantly. Absent justice, or justice being taken away, what are kingdoms but vast robberies? If you take justice out of the equation, if the purpose of government is not to protect the God-given rights of the individuals in the country being ruled by that government, then all it is a big criminal syndicate. It's a big band of robbers.
And, of course, we see this over in Iraq today.
Oh, yeah.
Where $10 to $12 billion just disappears. Nobody has any idea what happened to that. We're so incompetent, we have no idea what happened to that $8 to $12 billion. But certainly, we'll try not to make those mistakes again. Ladies and gentlemen, these people are not stupid.
No.
I mean, how anybody could believe that they could just accidentally misplace $8 to $12 billion... You've got to be incredibly gullible to believe what you're being told.
That's exactly right. You're expected to believe what you're told. That's your duty. That's your role in this machine. If you don't believe it, if you can't bring yourself to believe what you're being told, you're supposed to maintain the pretense of believing what you're told. You know, it's a lie that's supposed to be agreed upon. And it's gotten to the point now where I believe that most people who are intelligent and in possession of their faculties can exercise a little bit of critical insight into what's going on in the world are a little bit like the people that are in Soviet Russia who understood that the party line was the purest nonsense, but they were expected to at least pay lip service to the party line. They were required to, first of all, out of social convenience, for the sake of social convenience, and secondly, because they didn't want to end up being sent to the gulag or to the psyhuska, the psychiatric gulag, and being forcibly cured of their anti-Soviet tendencies. We've not quite reached that point yet, but stick around. Give us 4 or 5 years. At the rate we're going, we'll probably have a pretty similar system here in place in the United States. But we do have a kleptocracy, a government that robs through various means. The occupation and so-called reconstruction of Iraq was a spectacular example of that, where you had these shrink-wrapped pallets of freshly minted $100 bills being sent over to Iraq right from the Federal Reserve Bank in New York. They were stuffed by the ton onto these military transport planes, and then they were broken up into football-sized bricks that were being thrown off the back of flatbed trucks and also tossed around literally like footballs in the offices of these politically connected contractors.
Hold that thought. We'll be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stad. Our guest this evening is William Craig. Go ahead, William.
Yes. Well, we're talking about this riotous orgy of corruption that took place under the Coalition Provisional Authority in Iraq, and how that's a really good example, suitable microcosm of how the system works. He had, and I've mentioned this before, Jerry Bremer, L. Paul Bremer, the administrator of the Coalition Provisional Authority, he's somebody who had lobbied on behalf of Kissinger Associates back in the 1980s. Kissinger Associates being a big consulting and lobbying firm that played a key role in subsidizing the buildup of Saddam Hussein's war machine. Jerry Bremer, during the 1980s, roughly, 1983 to about 1988, was helping put together these deals whereby, fairly obscure to most people, not to farmers in Nebraska or Kansas or Iowa, but to most people, the Commodity Credit Corporation, CCC, is a very obscure program in the Department of Agriculture, but it was being used to subsidize shipments of grain to Iraq, and the subsidy was being skimmed by Saddam Hussein in order to purchase weapons, and the purchase of weapons were being directed in such a way that certain interests would benefit here in the United States and abroad that were connected to the type of people who would hire Kissinger and Associates to do their lobbying for them. Jerry Bremer was very deeply involved in arranging this, the subsidy and the buildup of Saddam Hussein's war machine. And so 20 years later, after I believe he started with Henry Kissinger in the mid-1980s, and in the early 2000s, after the occupation of Iraq and after Saddam Hussein was removed from power, it was Jerry Bremer who got to announce, "We got him," in December of 2003, when Saddam was pried out of a spider hole. It was a guy who'd helped build up that guy's regime who got to make the announcement that we got this guy. And he was presiding over this in multi-layered and incredibly vile apparatus of exploitation, corruption, and boodling that was the Coalition Provisional Authority, where you had countless tens of millions of dollars, hundreds of millions of dollars, nobody knows exactly how much, billions most likely, that were sent over there in cash and then thrown out with reckless abandon on all kinds of projects, most of which had nothing to do with actually rebuilding the infrastructure or helping to restore the civic life of Iraq, but were simply a way of a roundabout subsidy to politically connected groups. And we still see that same thing going on right now with the recent headlines about Halliburton and I believe Kellogg Brown and Reuter, KBRs is referred to now, the spinoff that was hived off from Halliburton.
Hold that thought. We'll be back here in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and our guest this evening, William Grigg. Before we go on, William, I want you to tell our listeners how they can get in touch with your blog and how they can get a copy of your book.
All right. First of all, I need to apologize to you. I've still not been able to get you a quantity of those of the book. The book is entitled Liberty and Eclipse, The War on Terror and the Rise of the Homeland Security State. I promise, Dr. Stan, I will make it a priority in the next couple of days to ensure that we get you a quantity of those books to sell to your listeners. In order to get it right now, the easiest way to find it is to go to the website of the Welch Foundation at rightsourceonline.com. Once again, that's one word, rightsourceonline.com. It takes you to the Right Source, which is a news page that has news stories, commentary pieces, video excerpts, and video commentaries that we find useful and edifying to our readers. And it also has a link to my blog, which is entitled Pro Libertate. That's Latin. It means for freedom. If you look at the left-hand side of the screen when you get to rightsourceonline.com, scroll down maybe about a third of the way or less down the page, look at the left-hand side of the screen, you'll see my photograph, and there'll be a link that'll take you to my blog. It's updated between 3 and 5 times a week as my schedule permits. We're also in the process of putting together a new issue of the e-journal or e-zine, which is also called Pro Libertate. That's been on hiatus simply because there's only so much that we've been able to do with our skeleton staff, and I've had a number of distractions. You mentioned earlier the situation with my large and young but growing family. The Pro Libertate e-zine should have a new issue out this month, and we have the editorial package ready. We're just simply in the business of putting it together. That would be, once again, an expanded version of the themes that are touched on my blog. And the blog is completely, obsessively devoted to the subject of individual liberty under God's law and the ways, multifarious ways, that government works to thwart our efforts to create a society based on freedom and individual dignity. The book is available through the website, the RightSource website. There's a large banner ad at the top. If you go to RightSourceOnline.com, at the top of the page, there's a large banner headline. You can click through and order directly from the website. We're working out an arrangement now to have it for sale by way of Amazon.com. And hopefully, in the near future, we'll be able to get you a suitable quantity of the books to sell through your retail division, Dr. Stan. I sure appreciate the opportunity. I'm sorry, once again, that this is something that has not been done to this point, but I will make a point of, I'll make a priority of getting that worked out before the end of the week.
All right, I'll appreciate that, because I know our listeners would love to get the book, but they can, in the meantime, if they want to get it, well, they can get it through your blog site.
Yeah, you can get it cheaper at the RightSource website than you'd be able to get it through Amazon. And there's also a discount for quantity purchases. This is something that we believe, given the themes that we're touching on, which would be, I think, neatly encapsulated as the real-time assault, the real-time destruction of the Bill of Rights and the privileges and immunities and protections that we've taken for granted in the common law since 1215 A.D., and the concomitant creation of a militarized garrison state. These things are happening. They're finally getting some attention from at least part of the public, and I think as the economy continues to erode and as people become a little bit more desperate, I think the government is going to start clearing its throat, and the things I talk about in that book are going to become even more obvious, the fact that we now have a circumstance in which the President of the United States, whoever he or she might be, would have the institutional power, not the legitimate authority, but the institutional power, to imprison any one of us for any reason for as long as the President sees fit without the benefit of a trial or legal recourse of any kind. The President could order us to be tortured or summarily killed. That this is the sort of thing that is being done right now to American citizens. These are the sort of things that really deserve our immediate and devoted attention. We need, if we're going to reverse the state of affairs, this is something we need to make a priority right now. I mean, the title of the book is Liberty in Eclipse. Our liberties right now are in the darkness, if you will, of an ideological eclipse. But an eclipse, hopefully, is a temporary state of affairs. It only occurs for a brief period of time, then the celestial bodies realign themselves, and some sense of normalcy is restored. Well, I hope that'll happen, but it's going to be something that can only be made to happen. The people get really, really angry and very well informed and start acting with an element of intrepidity.
Go right ahead.
Well, we were talking earlier about this immensely corrupt ruling elite that presides over us, and I don't know if you've heard of a book, Dr. Stan, called Free Lunch, How the Wealthiest Americans Enrich Themselves at Government Expense and Stick You with the Bill, by David K. Johnson. Have you heard of this book?
No, I really don't know the book at all.
Yeah, he also put out a book earlier called Perfectly Legal, which is about how that same cohort of people games the system. And the thing that I find really interesting about this this book is that there's, in the middle of it, I'm about halfway through it, there's a very detailed account of how a fellow by the name of George W. Bush, who had no particular expertise in anything useful, but had the immense good fortune of being the son of the President of the United States in the late 80s and early 1990s, made himself wealthy by assembling around himself a group of very wealthy donors to purchase the Texas Rangers baseball team. And in order to do so, what he did was he assured these investors that it would be a sweet deal, that they'd get the return on their investment by inducing the government of the city of Arlington to impose a half-cent increase on sales tax and then use that as a way of paying off the expense of building a stadium. And once the stadium was built, then everything that they brought in by way of revenues for the team would be above the line profit, and they could use that to pay off their original investment And in order to build the stadium, what they did was they used the power of eminent domain in order to evict a number of people off of their property so as to build this stadium, and once again at the expense of the taxpayers, in order to bring about this very profitable state of affairs for Bush and his investors. What Mr. Johnson doesn't point out, and this is something that we pointed out when I was with the New American a number of years ago, is that almost all of the investors who chipped in on this project, as well as the people who ended up donating to his gubernatorial campaign, and also donating as pioneers to his presidential campaign, they're pretty much the same core group of people. They were all members of the fraternity or the secret society called Skull and Bones, as was George Bush the Younger, as was George Bush the Elder, as was Prescott Bush. You know, that element of covert, occultic power arrangement and organization of power doesn't play a role in this book, but it's just fascinating to give you a really useful glimpse at the way that these super wealthy people were able to bring about a tax increase that benefited them, that redistributed money out of the pockets of very poor people. I mean, sales tax does tend to be somewhat regressive if you're talking about a tax on food, for instance, and groceries. But to redirect funds, redirect wealth from the pockets of the poor and the middle class into a sports authority that was used to build a stadium on land that was stolen through eminent domain for the purpose of private enrichment of this oligarchical group, and then they were able to sell the team in a few years and realize a profit of something like $164 million and change. And that was basically the wealth that made George W. Bush a wealthy man. He'd failed at everything else he'd tried. You know, he'd failed at drilling oil wells in Texas. It takes a unique gift, I suppose, to avoid striking oil in Texas, but George W. Bush has that in his skill set. But the way that he made himself wealthy was by assembling a bunch of bonesmen to get together to bring about a tax increase that profited them at the expense of the poor, and then using the power of eminent domain to steal the land on which was built this tax-subsidized baseball stadium. It's just a perfect example of how the system works. And there are other examples in the book that are almost as infuriating. For instance, the way that the baseball team in Washington, D.C., the Washington Nationals, was moved from Montreal, Canada, down to the District of Columbia. And this is all done at taxpayer expense. And they're talking about building this huge new stadium in Washington, D.C. to house the Washington Nationals. And it'll be set up in a really peculiar way, because the best seats will not be those with a really good view of the ball field. The best seats will be those that will provide the spectators with really good camera angles so they can be seen at the baseball game. And the politicians who go there in order to boost their profile with certain constituents, they're actually building the stadium in order to be a showcase, a boutique for politicians. And the way that it's set up, common people won't have access to this ballpark, in spite of the fact that this is a ballpark that's going to be paid for with taxpayer funds. The people who are going to have access to this will be the very wealthy, who will have all types of elegant, elitist skybox seating, and these can be used as bartering favors for lobbyists who are looking to use the power of government in order to get their own special deals subsidized to taxpayer expense. That's just, once again, sort of an apparently trivial way of illustrating it, but that's the system we live under right now. It's socialism for the wealthy. Socialism for the corporations. And I've described it before, the system we have is a type of corporate socialism where the risks are subsidized, the losses are socialized, and the profits are privatized. And in order to have this system persist, you have to have a huge apparatus to keep the rest of us in line. And that variety of socialism is more properly called fascism. I mean, that's pretty much the formula that Mussolini struck on in the early 1920s in Italy, following pretty closely the game plan that you find in Philip Drew Administrator, the book written by Colonel Edward Mandel House, the intimate advisor to Woodrow Wilson, and then later on provided the template for the New Deal. But pretty much that's, once again, the same type of blueprint that we're following now in the United States. And at the same time, you have people hymning the praises of capitalism and the free market as if we had anything that resembled the same. We don't. We've not had a free market in this country for decades, at the very least, and the system we're living under right now is becoming more and more overtly corporatist and more overtly fascist in the authoritarian, terroristic sense of the word. And hopefully people will start waking up to this. I don't think it's too late, but it's awfully close to being too late.
Okay, well, I certainly share your concern, and certainly people have to understand that there is a ruling elite. They have a different worldview because they believe they worship a different God, and certainly it is not simply by coincidence that the presidential candidates in 1994 both came from the same secret society, Skull and Bones,
yeah.
John Kerry and George W. Bush. And when Tim Russert asked each of them during interviews, you know, what their attitude was towards Skull and Bones, what was it? Both of them had the same reply. The society is so secret, it can't be discussed. Well, if it can't be discussed, where is their loyalty? Is it to the United States they've sworn an oath to uphold and to our Constitution? Or is it to the secret society where they, of course, swore an oath to Lucifer? And anybody who doubts that can go to the website williamhkennedy.com, williamhkennedy.com, see a video reproduction obtained really at great personal risk by someone who snuck in and photographed the initiation ceremonies where these people kiss the skull and then a human skull and then bow before a symbol of Lucifer, one of the members of the organization dressed up as that. And why would they do things like that? Well, you'll have to answer that yourself. Go right ahead, William.
When you're talking about the Skull and Bones connection here, it does strike people as being either creepy or lurid in a way that seems implausible. But the fact is, it's all a matter of the record. I mean, as you mentioned, Tim Russert on Meet the Press asked both Kerry and Bush about that connection, and neither one of them was willing to talk about it, in spite of the fact that one of them, Bush, was the most powerful politician on the planet, at least for all intents and purposes, all appearances, he appeared to be the most powerful politician on the planet. And John Kerry, of course, was a senator of long standing who was not without influence, and neither one of them would talk about Skull and Bones, so deep is their allegiance to that organization. And it's interesting, one of the very first things that George W. Bush did back in January 2001 was convene a reunion of his graduating class from Yale University, the members of that graduating class who were also members of the Skull and Bones Society there in the White House to celebrate their triumph. This is a man who professes to be a born-again Christian. One of the things that Christians are required to do if they truly become believers, this is something about which, once again, there is no ambiguity in the Bible, is that they have to repudiate and renounce all the hidden works of darkness. If you are a true believer, if you have been made a new creature through the indwelling of the Holy Spirit, once you've accepted Jesus Christ as your Lord, you simply cannot be in communication with a covert occultic organization. You cannot associate with those people. You cannot seek to advance their interests. You cannot profess allegiance to that group. But that was one of the very first things that George W. Bush did as president. I remember several years ago having a great deal of frustration trying to help a number of my Christian friends, people with whom I correspond on the internet in various chat rooms devoted to Christian subjects, help them understand just how important that is. That, I mean, you've got somebody, once again, who professes to be a born-again Christian, who makes something of a fetish out of his conspicuous piety. You know, Bill Clinton did the same thing. Bill Clinton carried around a 4-pound stunt Bible with him, and every time he'd get into trouble of the sort he got into with Monica Lewinsky, he'd always descend upon a black church somewhere to pontificate. And, of course, he was more of an Elmer Gantry type of a figure than George W. Bush has been. But the fact is that the chief selling point in George W. Bush's persona has been this concept that he was the prodigal who returned to the fold. He was somebody who had been rescued from the gutter, who'd been born again, and was a very serious and energetic Christian. And yet the very first thing he did as president, practically, was to reaffirm his allegiance to this Luciferian group, Order of Skull and Bones. It's Luciferian in the sense, once again, that it deals with all of these accoutrements and the mystique and the totems of occultism. Whether you believe this is just adolescent mummery or a serious covenantal relationship that these people enter into, you got to realize that they take it seriously. They take it very seriously, which is why Kerry and Bush demurred when asked about that subject on national television. And if you want to know why people do such things, take a look once again at the fact that at every key point in George W. Bush's ascent to the White House, in the making of his own personal fortune in the investment circles that propelled his political ambitions, he was aided by this network of bonesmen, and that this is a network which was wedded to Bush because Mr. Bush inherited that position in Skull and Bones from his father and grandfather.
Well, we live in a very, very strange world. Isn't it interesting that this is never brought out? Nobody ever asked why George Bush, pardon me, why John Kerry didn't challenge the election results in Ohio, where there was so much voter fraud. Very obviously, John Kerry had the money to do it. All he had to do was ask for a recount of the election. Why, he might have been the president, but I suspect he was told that, you know, the decision had been made. George Bush would destroy Christianity. He would discredit the Republican Party. John Kerry was not to challenge him. Was that? Did he get a telephone call? I don't know. Well, I will tell you that he refused to challenge the results in Ohio, where there was all sorts of election fraud and where John Kerry won the election. Go right ahead.
You know, the thing about the thing about what you just said, Dr. Stan, is that there are, for these people who are disfigured with their lust and ambition to become president, there are obviously things that are more important to them even than the presidency. There's some force that we can only dimly see, and then only an outline, and then only out of the corner of an eye, as it were. There are some things that exert an influence on people, very proud, ambitious men and women, that makes them willing to yield at least some of their ambitions. And that's why people of your perspective and my perspective, the perspective that we share, we say it's important to realize that there is this dark force that has to be taken into account when we're talking about these developments that result in the accumulation of power at the expense of our liberty. It's not simply a case of the cumulative impact of the flaws in our human nature once those flaws become wedded to political power. I mean, that certainly is a lot of that. Even if we didn't have to deal with this organized, semi-occultic, dimly seen, largely submerged power elite, if we didn't have to deal with that, we'd still have problems because, you know, we're fallen human beings. Because we're fallen human beings, there are always problems that result when people acquire power. But when you're talking about an organized effort to aggrandize certain people because they're part of this semi-concealed fraternity, then that's something that has to be factored in when we're trying to understand what's going on. We're not being tripped over, we're being kicked, to use that hoary old idiom about how even a stupid dog can discern between those two indignities. But when you talk once again about George W. Bush, I find it fascinating that here's somebody who obviously, on the face of things, was never qualified to be president of the United States. I mean, he's obviously somebody who was beyond his Peter principle limit managing a Walmart. This is somebody who had no success in business. He distinguished himself as a student primarily by his lack of distinguishing achievements. You know, he got a gentleman's C at Yale, and in spite of that, he was able to go on to graduate school on very good terms because of the influence of his father and his grandfather, Prescott Bush and George H.W. Bush. And then he, of course, ended up in the Skull and Bones Society his senior year at Yale. He was given, as is the custom, he was given a new name in that fraternity. He never got around to changing his name. He kept his default name, which was Temporary. He was given the temporary name of Temporary until he thought of something else. He couldn't bestir himself to the modest effort to go out and think up a more elegant, suitable, or mysterious, or enigmatic name. He just
hold
stuck
that thought.
With
we're out of time. God bless. You talk to you later. Bye-bye.
Bye.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I do hope that you enjoy our conversations with William Grieg. I find it always fascinating, and William Grieg, of course, will be with us again Thursday afternoon on our 3 o'clock program. But this is the time when I have to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported, and we're really dependent upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out across America 5 hours every day, and as a total of about 60 outlets every week. Certainly, many of those programs are half-hour programs, weekend programs, but we're reaching people with the information they're not getting elsewhere. So if you'd like to join the Radio Liberty family of supporters and help us, our number is 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927. Are you concerned about the weather, the strange weather we're having now? Why would we be having tornadoes across the eastern part of the United States this time of year? Why are we having the coldest winters? Why simply are some areas having droughts and other areas having floods? Do you know that they have the ability to modify the weather? Do you know that there are organizations that will modify the weather for a given amount of money and the government allows them to do it? If you doubt that, go up on the internet and simply type in weather modification company and you'll get the names of a lot of these companies. They don't, of course, want the public to know. But we have a great DVD on weather modification or weather control. We have a great four-tape set on weather control. We have a four-tape set on Project HARP. And then we have two excellent books. One of them is called Weather Modification. The other is HARP, The Ultimate Weapon. And they know how to modify the weather. We do not know what they're doing. Because, of course, all this information is top secret. Because, of course, the government says we cannot let Osama bin Laden know what we're doing with weather modification. But what a wonderful way to create droughts and famine in Africa and terrible suffering in South America. And, of course, they use weather modification. They're using it on the enemy today, right here in the United States. And they can modify the jet stream. But if you really need to get the information, these are great four-tape sets, specifically on weather modification, a great DVD by Bob Fletcher, a great book by Jerry Smith, and he has, of course, weather modification, and the second title, HARP, The Ultimate Weapon. And then, of course, the material that on HARP, we have a four-tape set on HARP. So you'll get the material from Ridley Limited you won't get elsewhere. We have a great new four-tape set on, or four-CD set. You can get them in tapes or CDs on the Bilderbergers. And we actually have a four-tape set. We have a DVD put out by Alex Jones called The End Game on the Bilderbergers and Population Control. And then, of course, we have the book on the Bilderbergers written by Daniel Estulin called Bilderbergers. And then we have the book written by James Tucker, Bilderberger Diary. And then, of course, we have the book written by our good friend William H. Kennedy, Satanic Crimes, goes into the Bilderbergers. And, of course, there are crimes of pedophilia and murder and satanic sacrifices and fascinating material. We also have a four-tape set on that subject called Satanic Crimes, available either in DVD or in the four-tape sets. You need to have this information. Of course, we have a four-tape set on Skull and Bones and all sorts of books on Skull and Bones. We have a four-tape set on the Bohemian Grove and an excellent a video on the Bohemian Grove, the Secrets of the Bohemian Grove DVD by Alex Jones. And you need to understand that there are occult organizations that influence every aspect of our lives, and there is an elite group who belongs actually to literally all of these groups, whether it be the Bilderbergers, whether it be Skull and Bones, whether it be the Bohemian Grove, where they, of course, they worship the owl and have a feigned human sacrifice. At least everything would suggest it's a feigned human sacrifice. And if you'd like to see the sacrifice being carried out, where the leaders of our country are wearing their black robes and black hoods. Again, the DVD is The Secrets of the Bohemian Grove, our number 1-800-544-8927. 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.
wherever you're situated on this great, big, beautiful...